This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Life is going on in war-torn Libya. In Benghazi, one of the cities where Libyans started a drive for freedom, we encountered Hisham Saadawi hitting a drive. He chased that tee shot across a makeshift golf course, a stretch of sandy wasteland. He's 12 years old.
Looks like he's got a 7-iron, about 150 yards to the green. Yellow flag on that pile of sand over there by the highway.
On this course with no grass, local rules allowed him to position the ball in a little square of artificial turf he carried around.
Do you have a favorite golfer among the golfers in the world? Tiger Woods.
Hisham dreams of turning pro, and after a brief talk, he hurried on, focused on his match, and oblivious to the heavily armed militias that still jostle for power in Libya and that were roaming his city that very afternoon.
Oh, beautiful little wedge shot. Oh, a little long, though. It's going to get really tricky from there.
People say golf is a microcosm of life, and here was a microcosm of Libya, a talented kid in a striped shirt improvising his way across the sand. Most of this nation is under 25 years old. All those young people just lived through a nasty civil war. To assess their prospects, we met students in schools across the nation during Morning Edition's recent revolutionary road trip. In some schools, we found optimism.
We can now dream and actually make our dream come true in Libya.
The key words for Ala Barakat are in Libya. Before the revolution that overthrew Muammar Gaddafi, his dreams involved leaving Libya. We met him at Benghazi University, where students wear Western-style clothes, backpacks over their shoulders. Ala's classmate Amr Zubehi is inspired by a one-time college student in America.
I want to make a new idea, like a Facebook. Something makes a difference in the world.
The same way that Mark Zuckerberg in the United States,
yeah,
as a college student.
Not social network.
You want it to be your own idea?
Yes, in Libya.
In Libya. It's hard for a visitor to miss Libya's possibilities. Coastal cities curl comfortably around their harbors, and olive groves break up the desert between. Beaches run down to the Mediterranean, which glitters like a great bowl of sapphires. Libyan oil flows into tankers offshore. Seizing the future, though, requires Libya's young people to recalibrate the past, as we learn several hundred miles west of Benghazi at the Martyrs of Libya school.
Do you remember the war?
Yes.
The teenage girls in this schoolyard live in the city of Homs.
And did you have relatives who were involved in the fighting also?
Yes.
You're raising hands. You did. Your father fought.
The winners of that revolution have now changed the school curriculum. History in particular is very different from what the Martyrs of Libya girls studied just last year.
What do you remember from last year when you studied history, Isra?
Isra is 15. Like every girl in the schoolyard, she wears a uniform, a white headscarf and a gray cloak that to Western eyes resembles a raincoat. Last year's class was all about Gaddafi's achievements, like a famous irrigation project.
Oh, the Great Man River Project. Okay, the water project. Okay.
African Union.
How Africans love Gaddafi.
The girls call it the history of one man, and the old textbooks symbolized the way that even children were co-opted by Gaddafi's regime. But by the end of this school year, that text was replaced.
I'm just flipping through here.
The new book doesn't mention Gaddafi's rule until the final pages, and then tells of corruption and atrocities.
Oh, we have photos in this one.
So this guy, his name is Sadiq Shwehdi, and Gaddafi hanged them in Benghazi in 1984 in the basketball court.
So the history books have changed, but it may be harder for students to absorb their own past experiences. Across a 600-mile stretch of Libya, every group of students we met had relatives or friends killed in the revolution. At a school in the city of Misrata, you feel the weight of the recent past as soon as you walk in the door. Photos of dead community members hang on the wall. In a computer class, we met Inas Abubakar, who was about to turn 15. She said she loves Justin Bieber, that she longs to study in South Korea, and also that her uncle fought in the war.
18th of May, my uncle died.
Did you hear the story of how he died?
They said, like, someone shot him from a roof from the building.
Mm-hmm. A sniper.
Sniper.
Right?
The bullet came to his face and his cheek, and he died.
Misrata kids can at least reassure themselves that their side won the war, reassurance that is not available down the road in a city that definitely lost.
I can't shut my eyes, I can't go to sleep, I can't even cry, I'm all out of tears.
We move now to a high school in Sirte, the home city of Muammar Gaddafi, where Gaddafi loyalists fought until their leader was killed here in October. Since then, school administrators have made changes. When boys assemble in the concrete schoolyard, an English language revolutionary rap blasts over the speakers.
I live for my people, die for liberation, fight with my pen for emancipation, and I know.
Blast holes in the school walls have been repaired, but apartment buildings next door stand in ruins. Inside the school, we met a group of boys in their late teens, half of whom come from families that favored Gaddafi.
3 and 3, is that right?
Yes.
Do you guys accept that? 3 of you were with the revolution and 3
again?
They nod yes. One of the students, Ramadan Trafia, looks a lot like a young Muammar Gaddafi. Same brilliant smile, same mass of black hair. He's a member of Gaddafi's tribe, and the other students tease him by calling him Bushaf Shufa, roughly Father Curly Hair, a nickname of the dead leader.
I'm from Gaddafi tribe, and he's a part of the tribe, and I love him.
You love him still?
Yes.
Asked if he loves anything Gaddafi did, Turfia begins reciting achievements chronicled in the old history textbooks, like the Great Man River Project. 4 of Turfia's classmates were killed fighting to defend their leader. The vice principal in this school is a former rebel fighter who has caught some students defacing the Libyan flag that the new government put on the new textbooks. Hoping to impose discipline, he's been walking the halls in a camouflage uniform while carrying a set of handcuffs. I confiscated this phone, he says. Now I have to smash it. The student's phone contained pro-Gaddafi songs and videos. The phone came from one of the students talking with us. That student, Thea Yusuf, had a cousin who rode in the convoy in which Gaddafi was killed. An image inside Yusuf's phone shows his cousin in rebel custody just before he also was killed.
So there's no doubt. It wasn't that he was killed in fighting, he was executed.
Yeah, after they killed them.
Thea Yusuf insists his family wants neither justice nor revenge, though a tear comes to his eye as he speaks. The vice principal in the combat uniform is standing nearby, and even he's moved. He ends up returning the phone he confiscated from Yusuf, along with the pro-Gaddafi images saved inside.
What's the video we're looking at now?
Sirte before the war.
This is like a promotional video for Sirte before the war.
Yeah, exactly.
Lights everywhere in the trees, expensive cars going around, the green Libyan flag flying.
Today, large stretches of Sirte are a wasteland, though the Mediterranean still glistens just outside the school and beach sand drifts down the streets. When we asked the kids in this school about their dreams for the future, their words were vague and faint. What's vivid for them is the past, like the images in that student's phone. Now, at the start of that story, we heard Libyan kids on a golf course made of sand. You can see what that looks like. Watch an audio slideshow of another world from Libya's wars at npr.org.